Dear friends of the Kolbe Center, Pax Christi. In this newsletter, we will continue our reflections on the importance of genealogy and of our direct link to God our Creator through our first parents, Saint Adam and Saint Eve. Chinese Whispers. Most of our readers will have experienced a game known as Chinese Whispers, although it could just as well be called American Whispers or Australian Whispers. A group of children are lined up, and the child at one end of the line is given a sentence to pass on in a whisper to the child next to him, who then passes it on in a whisper to the child next to him, until the message reaches the end of the line, at which point the child at the end of the chain announces the message as he received it from his neighbor. Howls of laughter usually erupt at this point, because the message announced often bears little, if any, resemblance to the original message. When I was a young elementary school teacher, I used this exercise with my 10 and 11-year-old students in history classes to demonstrate that oral tradition was unreliable, just as a similar exercise had been used by countless numbers of teachers to teach untold numbers of students the same lesson. I never reflected on the absurdity of drawing such a weighty conclusion from such a silly exercise, and it took me decades to realize the utter folly of the demonstration. When one realizes how important genealogy was to our Hebrew forebears and to ancient people in general, it becomes apparent that the game of Chinese whispers actually demonstrates how far modern man has drifted away from the pious mentality of our ancestors, both Christian and pagan, and for whom a precise knowledge of their lineage had a profound and often practical significance. If one were to imagine a situation in which a kidnapper told a group of kidnapped children to play Chinese whispers, and that the penalty for garbling even a syllable of the message would be certain death, there is not a group of children in the world who would not successfully hand on the message. The children know that transmitting the message is not important to them or to anyone else, and that they are expected to butcher it, so they do. But that is a far cry from the oral tradition of our ancestors. The historicity of Genesis. The significance of the historicity of Genesis genealogical records can hardly be overestimated. In his famous work, How Christians Said the First Mass, Father James L. Marr shows how the interconnecting lifespans of the antediluvian patriarchs explain how an accurate record of the history of mankind from creation and the fall down to Abraham could easily be accomplished in four lifespans. Adam died in the year 930 when Methuselah was 94 years old. The latter lived till Sem, called Melchizedek, was in his 50th year. Sem, or Melchizedek, died on Sion when Isaac was 33 years of age, and the latter lived till he was 180. 2,288 years after the creation of Adam, but a short time before the birth of Aram, Moses' father. Thus history came down from Adam and the patriarchs to Moses, the great lawgiver, founder of the Hebrew nationality, and writer of the five books of the Bible. It is well known that non-literate peoples who rely on their memories for the accurate transmission of important information often achieve prodigious feats of memorization. The history of Buddhism records the preservation of the entire corpus of Buddha's teaching by oral transmission for 500 years at a time when lifespans had fallen drastically below their antediluvian levels. If short-lived pagans could preserve intact a human revelation for a minimum of seven lifespans of 70 years or more, can one doubt that an accurate history of mankind from Adam to Abraham could be transmitted with divine assistance over 4 lifespans. The question is all the more telling in view of the fact that genetic mistakes had accumulated in the human genome to a much greater extent by the advent of Buddha than in the days of Noah, with a consequent weakening of the physical and mental powers of the entire human race. Indeed, it is a remarkable fact that the same chronology contained in the Masoretic text of the Old Testament appears in pagan chronicles independent of Jewish or Christian influence. The Irish bards who recorded the history of their people and the genealogies of their leading families dated events from the creation of the world approximately 1,654 years prior to a global flood. According to the pre-Christian Irish chroniclers, a certain descendant of Noah's son Japhet, named Partholon, established the first colony in Ireland 864 years after the Great Flood. The same chronicles record the 4th colonization of Ireland by a people called the Milesians in the year 3500 after creation, or 504 BC. According to historian Bill Cooper, the city of Miletus, whose ruins stand on the present-day Turkish mainland, was finally overrun and destroyed by the Persian army in the year 494 BC. And in the decades prior to this disaster, the people of Miletus had been under an ever-increasing threat. Life as it was neither comfortable nor certain, and nothing would have been more natural than that a colony of Milesians should decide to flee the Persian menace. They would seek a land sufficiently far away to be safe, was fertile, and which was well known to the mariners, in particular the Phoenician mariners, of the eastern Mediterranean. That the city of Miletus should be known to us today as having been an essentially Ionian outpost should be of no real consequence, for we have already seen the Irish accounts trace descent of the Irish variously from both Phoenician and Scythian stock, and both Phoenicians and Scythians would certainly have been found amongst the city's population. And we are thus compelled to take the claims of the early Irish chroniclers very seriously indeed. The reliability of the Irish chronicles can be gauged by the fact that the bards who transmitted them functioned as the sole repository of laws and genealogies. According to one historian, the books of genealogies and pedigrees form a most important element in Irish pagan history. For social and political reasons, the Irish Celt preserved his genealogical tree with scrupulous precision. Property rights and the governing power were transmitted with patriarchal exactitude on strict claims of primogeniture, which could only be refused under certain conditions defined by law, and in obedience to an ancient law established long before the introduction of Christianity. All the provincial records, as well as those of various chieftains, were required to be furnished every third year to the convocation at Tara, where they were compared and corrected. The convocations at Tara ensured that the bards preserved the genealogies and laws intact. Although an Irish bard enjoyed a dignity next to a king, a single significant mistake in his recital of a law or a lineage, easily detected by his fellow bards in the audience, could cost him his rank. Like the Irish bards, the poets of the Angles, Saxons, and Vikings recorded the genealogies of their leading families from Noah's flood until their day without reference to any Jewish or Christian sources of information. The Irish chronicles bear witness to the truth of the biblical account of Noah's flood, as well as the post-flood migrations and population explosion after the Tower of Babel. Given the longer lifespans of people in the immediate post-flood era, which gradually tapered off to a stable level after 10 generations, the biblical population figures make complete sense, beginning with the three sons of Noah and their wives in 2238 BC, and assuming an average of 10 children per family, it would be possible for them to have a total of 2.25 million great-grandchildren within 7 generations, or after 210 years. He has made from one man all the nations on the earth. Acts 17:26. Skeptics assume that the agreement between the chronologies handed down by pagan tribes in Europe and the biblical chronology reflects the later influence of Christian monks who redacted the ancient genealogies and chronologies and made them fit the biblical record. It is not difficult to show that the agreement between the pagan genealogies and the biblical ones predates contact between the pagans and Christian evangelists. But we also find examples of non-European pagan nations whose traditions and genealogies perfectly harmonized with the biblical record for centuries prior to their first contact with Catholic missionaries. Missionary Edgar Truax labored among the Miao tribes of China and learned they preserved the genealogy of their ancestors all the way back to St. Adam and St. Eve. According to an article in Acts and Facts magazine, the Miao tribes, or as it is spelled in most encyclopedias, M-I-A-U-T-S-O, at one time occupied most of inland China south of the Yangtze River, but have been gradually driven into the mountains of the southwest by the better armed and better organized Chinese. The Miao of our section claim to have been driven out of Qianxi province. The Miao traditions are very precise as compared with those of many primitive peoples, because they are not only handed down in metrical form, but also they are in couplets, in which the same or similar meaning is expressed in different wording, so that the second sentence acts as a definition of the first, where it might otherwise not be clear. This is very much like one form of Hebrew poetry, an example of which is found in Psalm 21, 1 and 2. According to the Miao genealogies, the Miao tribes traced their descent from Japhet, the son of Noah. The patriarch Japhu got the center of nations. The son he begat was the patriarch Gomen, who took him a wife called matriarch Goyang. Their grandson and his wife took the name Tutan. Their descendants are given in order as follows: patriarch Guoden Miwan, matriarch Guoden Miju, patriarch Zhenku Daovyu, matriarch Genio Boe, patriarch Ganjin Nuwong, wife not given, patriarch Sijiwang, matriarch Mao Guin. Their children, 11 in number, was each the head of a family. 5 branches became the Miao nation. 6 families joined with the Chinese. The story continues through many more pages telling of the separation of the Chinese and the Miao, their travels and demon worship, their division into families. The Miao at funerals and weddings recite the ancestry of the principal or principles clear back to Adam. Their frequent use of it may account for its accuracy. The Miao account recalls the whole sacred history of Genesis 1 through 11. Their account of creation locates the creation of the earth at the very beginning and distinguishes, as Moses does, between the creation of light in the beginning of the creation period and the creation of the sun and moon later in the creation period. The creation: on the day God created the heavens and earth, on that day he opened the gateway of light. In the earth then he made heaps of earth and of stone. In the sky he made bodies, the sun and the moon. In the earth he created the hawk and the kite. In the water created the lobster and fish. In the wilderness he made the tiger and bear. Made verdure to cover the mountains. Made forest extend with the ranges. Made the light green cane. Made the rank bamboo. Man. On the earth he created a man from the dirt. Of the man thus created, a woman he formed. Then the patriarch dirt made a balance of stones, estimated the weight of the earth to the bottom, calculated the bulk of the heavenly bodies, and pondered the ways of the deity, God. The patriarch dirt begat patriarch Sete. The patriarch Sete begat a son, Lausu. And Lausu had Gelo, and he begat Lama. The patriarch Lama begat the man Nua. His wife was the matriarch, Gauboluen. Their sons were Lohan, Loshin, and Jahu. So the earth began filling with tribes and with families. Creation was shared by the clans and the peoples. The world wicked. These did not God's will nor returned his affection, but fought with each other, defying the Godhead. Their leaders shook fists in the face of the mighty. Then the earth was convulsed to the depth of 3 strata, rending the air to the utmost heaven. God's anger arose till his being was changed. His wrath flaring up filled his eyes and his face, until he must come and demolish humanity, come and destroy a whole world full of people. The flood. So it poured 40 days in sheets and in torrents. Then 55 days of misting and drizzle. The water surmounted the mountains and ranges. The deluge ascending left valley and hollow, an earth with no earth upon which to take refuge, a world with no foothold where one might subsist. The people were baffled, impotent, and ruined, despairing, horror-stricken, diminished and finished. But the patriarch Nua was righteous. The matriarch Gauboluen was upright, built a boat very wide, made a ship very vast. Their household entire got aboard and were floated. The family complete rode the deluge in safety. The animals with him were female and male. The birds went along and were mated in pairs. When the time was fulfilled, God commanded the waters. The day had arrived. The flood waters receded. Then Nua liberated a dove from their refuge, sent a bird to go forth and bring again tidings. The flood had gone down into lake and to ocean. The mud was confined to the pools and the hollows. There was land once again where a man might reside. There was a place in the earth now to rear habitations. Buffalo then were brought, an oblation to God. Fatter cattle became sacrificed to the mighty. The Divine One then gave them his blessing. Their God then bestowed his good graces. Babel. Lohan then begat Cusha and Mese. Loshan begat Elan and Nagshur. Their offspring begotten became tribes and peoples. Their descendants established encampments and cities. Their singing was all with the same tunes and music. Their speaking was all with the same words and language. Then they said, "Let us build us a very big city. Let us raise into heaven a very high tower." This was wrong, but they reached this decision. Not right, but they rashly persisted. God struck at them then, changed their language and accent. Descending in wrath, he confused tones and voices. One speaks to the others, who hear him has no meaning. He's speaking in words, but they can't understand him. So the city they builded was never completed. The tower they wrought has to stand thus unfinished. In despair, then, they separate under all heaven. They part from each other the globe to encircle. They arrive at six corners and speak the six languages. The sacred history of Genesis 1 through 11, the common heritage of all mankind. Desperate to deny the truth of the sacred history of Genesis and to replace it with an evolutionary myth of their own making, modernist thinkers like psychologist Carl Jung and his followers postulate a collective unconscious from which mankind draws forth universal archetypes. By this means, they try to explain away the fact that non-industrialized people groups all over the world have retained a memory of all the major events recorded in the first 11 chapters of the sacred history of Genesis. At the end of the day, the Jungians' attempts to explain away our common historical heritage are as laughable as Carl Sagan's attempts to explain away the overwhelming evidence for human and dinosaur coexistence as the result of man's having preserved a genetic memory of the age of reptiles. In our next newsletter, we will examine the dire consequences of allowing our common heritage to be stolen away from us. In the meantime, I remain, yours in Christ through the Immaculata, in union with St. Joseph, you, Owen. P.S. In September, I will make a far-reaching road trip for the Kolbe Center with a midpoint presentation in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on September 19th. If anyone can arrange a talk or a seminar anywhere between Virginia and Kansas, Missouri, to the west, or between Kansas, Missouri, and Wisconsin to the north, before the 19th, or between Wisconsin and Virginia after the 19th, please let me know so that we can plan accordingly.